Good morning to everyone here in our vast, expansive audience, and also good morning to those of you that are watching this via web in the comfort of your own home or office. We have an interesting session, I hope. I think you will find it enlightening if you're interested in competency-based education. In addition to that, you will have an opportunity to ask questions of our panelists, who have graciously agreed to join me in sharing, really for the first time publicly, some of the lessons they are learning as they adopt, and we always say adapt, the Western Governors University model into a competency-based program that fits within the community college in which each of these deans work. Let me start very briefly by giving you just a sense of what is competency-based education. And as this person who is sweeping away the old is trying to let us know, seat time is not a unit of learning. And we know that, and the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching is beginning to examine that and try to figure out what is a unit of learning. But that's another talk for another time. When we talk about competency-based education, we're talking about flipping the relationship that we usually have in American higher education between time and mastery. So in our traditional settings, a student starts at the beginning of a semester or a quarter, works with the learning materials, the faculty, the other students, and at the end of the semester or the quarter has mastered everything, gets an A, has mastered some of it, might get a C, or kind of didn't make the cut and does not pass the course. In a competency-based program, among other things, we're flipping that relationship. So the student works to mastery, and when the student has achieved mastery, regardless of time, somewhat, then the student progresses into the next stage of his or her learning. This is a framework in which we can actually offer personalized learning experiences to students because we are not assuming every student learns everything at the same rate, nor do all students learn a variety of things at the same rate. It does mean that we can personally support students in their learning because we're shifting the way in which we think about everything that goes on between the relationship between the student's relationship with the learning materials and his or her faculty member. In a CBE program, we can guarantee, that is, we, the institution that offers the degree, can guarantee that the students can explicitly really demonstrate the skills and knowledge that are required of their field of study. And as we've shown as a proof of concept with Western Governors University, we can scale it. And all the work we're doing with a variety of colleges are trying to move in that direction. I think another important part to this transition into competency-based education is that it means we can import externally produced learning resources, regardless of their source, as long as they're good. And we have not in any way undermined the integrity of the institution, nor have we taken away from the faculty their control over the curriculum. Because the curriculum is then determined by the faculty saying what it is a student needs to learn and how are we going to measure whether or not the student has mastered that material. This is just to give you a sense of what's gone on at Western Governors University over the last 16, 17 years. We're now an institution scattered across the United States with approximately 40,000 students, and they all work in that completely competency-based framework and everything is, in essence, online. Students work with their faculty in real time by voice and by web and various other things. Right now, WGU is continuing our work with about 11 community colleges throughout the U.S., and each of those colleges is developing an IT program that is competency-based. They are each using common design principles, but they are creating programs that fit within their own culture, and that means the institution, it means their state system, if they're part of a system, or it means the state in general. These are the competency-based design principles, I think is the best way to put it, that really grows out of the work we've been doing with these colleges. And each of the colleges are using these principles as a way to support and assure the decisions that they are making are going to work for the end result. But it looks different at each place. And this morning, we have two of the deans from two of our partner colleges who have been willing to come and share some of the lessons they are learning. And we're going to stop with the PowerPoints and go now to a conversation with Linda Smarzik from Austin Community College District and, I left Karen's name. No, Karen's at the top. Karen Gordon at Valencia College in Florida. Let me start by asking these two brave souls to tell us just a little bit about the unique environments in which each of these colleges rest. And Linda, let me start with you. Could you tell us a little bit about the Austin Community College District?
Sure. Austin Community College District, there's about 40,000 students, and in that our mission is pretty much the same as any community college throughout the United States, in which we attempt to have the student come in, get a two-year degree, transfer to a four-year university, get a two-year degree in a workforce field, move out, get into the workforce, or have a student come back from the workforce and then get a degree and be retrained and retooled to then go back out into a new job. So it's pretty much just like everybody else. In terms of Austin, a lot of you know that it's a very technical hub. It's been called the second Silicon Valley. You know, we're not fond of that, but in that it's also very creative, very innovative. You've heard it called the music capital of the world. It's true. You can find music anywhere. What's also interesting about Austin is that the unemployment rate, depending on which BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics month you look at, is around 5.3%. Now that our government is back working today, which we're glad about, that we'll be able to find out numbers for August and September. In relation to Texas, that's about 6.4% unemployment rate, and the nation's somewhere around, I think, 7.3%. There are about 4,000 companies in the technical area in Austin, employing about 100,000 technical workers. With it, the many lists that go out, one of them lists Austin as the second highest city of being able to employ high-tech workers in startups with a median range salary of about $66,000 per year. With this comes more traffic, with 150-plus people moving there a day, more traffic. The heat in the middle of the summer, it's pretty hot there. So just if you're thinking about moving there, know that it's pretty hot. Anyway, that's us.
And I can attest to that because I always seem to be there the hottest points in time. Thank you. Karen, would you tell us a little bit about the unique elements of Valencia College and the community of Valencia, around Valencia?
Yeah, Valencia College is in Orlando, Florida. We have five campuses in Orange and Osceola. We serve about 65,000 students in those five campuses. We have AS and AA programs. I think we have about 30% in AS programs, 30% of our students. And our the Orlando area, the greater Orlando area, obviously is Disney World, Universal, theme parks, but we also have a technology sector, we have a significant hospitality sector. So there are service jobs, IT jobs in all of those various industries. Orlando also has a simulation and some defense contractor work as well. And we, when we started this process with Western Governors, we were looking specifically at what we would do to develop a competency-based IT program. And so we're exploring that. That's where we are right now.
Thank you. And as both of these colleges move in the direction of competency-based, we of course hope that their students will want to, when they're ready, transfer to Western Governors University for their baccalaureate and potentially master's degrees, but we'll see. Linda, let me go back to you for just a moment, and could you tell us why you chose to explore a CBE program?
Actually, this is a great question. What happened is about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago now, four presidents from four different areas got together and said, why don't we go and apply for a DOL grant, Department of Labor, for competency-based education. That would be the Austin Community College, it would be Broward Community College, Sinclair Community College, and Western Governors University. So when we you know, down in the trenches heard about this, I actually was secretly delighted because we had some problems to solve, and I did not know where we were going to get the funding to solve these problems. So the first problem was that, as you know, Austin's a technology hub, but in spite of all the education in Austin, UT, Austin Community College, St. Edward's, a number of other institutions, we're only providing about 70% of the workforce and being able to educate that much to be able to move out and move into the industry. As a result, the industry, they're stealing from each other, stealing talent from each other. So we realize, how do we provide more employees to this particular area? We also knew that a lot of our students were, it wasn't that they weren't coming, they're coming. We have plenty of students coming, but it takes an average of 5.7 years for a student to move through our system for a two-year degree. And the reason for that is about 80, depending on which report you look at, between 78 to 80% of our students attend college part-time. They are working, and they are working to be able to actually live in Austin. With that, what they do is they turn to distance learning thinking, that's a solution. I can be able to weave distance learning with my work schedule. It's easier. It won't take up as much time. And with that, we find that there is a lack of success in the distance learning compared to traditional learning. In my area, 3 out of 10 are unsuccessful in traditional learning, a D, F, or withdrawal. And with distance learning, it's 4 out of 10. Problem. So there was problem number 2, maybe number 3. With that, we realized that the students, because they didn't want to sit in a 16, they don't want to sit in a 16-week class anymore. It's taken them too long to go through the system. They're turning to MOOCs. They're turning to YouTube. They're turning to, I love Lynda.com. I've turned to her many times myself. And with that, they are starting to self-train. One of my best examples is a friend of mine's son works at an unnamed, very large computer concern in California, in which he is sitting side by side as a web developer with other web developers trained and educated by Stanford, side by side. But he does not have one credit hour to his name. He's self-taught. So with this, we realized these are a number of problems that need to be solved that we could see that competency-based education, distance learning, being able to pace yourself. If you already know a little bit of Java, that's wonderful. Then you can go through a Java course instead of 16 weeks. You can go through it in maybe 4 weeks instead, if you already know Java. So we secretly were delighted this came to us.
Great. Now, Karen, at Valencia, you guys have taken another, tactic approach of looking at CBE. Austin kind of dove in, and you already have students enrolled, and we'll talk about those in just a moment. Why was Valencia interested?
We were contacted by you. You had some conversations with the administrator, and we talked to some of the faculty and said, is this something you'd like to learn more about and develop, and got an immediate positive response. We looked at it and we said, this is an opportunity to provide a way for students to get IT certificates that would be meaningful in the workforce and in a self-paced modality, but we weren't quite sure what would our model be, how would we do it. Linda School got a Department of Labor grant, which Valencia is not a part of. We do not have that grant. And we wanted to determine what would our model be. And so what we've begun, because just part of the Valencia culture, is a very collaborative effort among all of the various stakeholders, the Office of Information Technology, Instructional Designers, Faculty, Student Services, exploring what is out there. So we've been participating in some of the Western Governors' seminars and webinars. We visited Broward College, because Broward in Fort Lauderdale is another school that has a Department of Labor grant. We're going to be go to meeting with Sinclair to to figure out what is our model, how do we do this, but we definitely see this as an opportunity for students we are already competency based, we're outcome based in our courses, and it just seemed like a natural next progression as well for us.
Thanks. Now, each of you at your colleges, as well as these other nine colleges, are building and discovering what an internal model for competency-based means, touching probably every piece of your organization as you move in this direction. And that's a little different from some of the other sort of high-profile projects that are out there right now. But can you tell me, have you found or have champions emerged on campus to, you know, sort of move this forward? And who are they, or what kinds of roles do they have? Karen, why don't we start with you?
I think the more that we're getting people involved in these meetings, we took a van from Orlando down to Fort Lauderdale, filled it up with 11 Valencia people, and met with counterparts at Broward. And it was a very engaging experience for the Valencia people. We had instructional designers, IT, assessment, curriculum, faculty, our assistant vice president for workforce. And as a result of that, we have a couple of faculty that actually want to begin piloting creating one of the competency-based courses. One of the faculty that came with us was a digital media faculty as well, not just IT, and there just seemed to be a natural connection with the digital media faculty and the IT. So we do have faculty that are very interested. I think our IT have been very involved. For Valencia, it's, if we do this, how do we do this? Because the student services piece has to be determined, everything online. The registration and infrastructure for that has to be completely online. Because if you're going to do this program, you're going to start ramping up. At some point, you can't be doing manual overrides for getting people in the course or dealing with fine aid. So we want to make sure that if this is something we're going to go forward with, that we know exactly what it is, how we do it, what it's going to take to do it, because, again, we're not part of a Department of Labor grant, so we've got to line everything up. And so we've been in that process. We're actually gearing up more this semester.
There's another piece to that, that one of the stories I got from your faculty in a visit to your campus that I just want to share.
Sure.
Is there, as in many colleges across the country, there is a very small number of full-time faculty in the department that you're targeting, and a very large number of adjunct faculty that work with particularly the beginning students. And in the conversation with the full-time faculty, they quickly became aware that in this CBE program, they really could have more control over the curriculum and a better outcome for students, so that regardless of who was supporting that student in his or her learning, whether it was one of the full-time faculty or one of the many more adjunct faculty that are engaged to work with students, the outcomes would be so much more similar for students who moved through the program that they could progress in ways that were more predictable. And I thought that was an interesting story that came from the faculty on your campus.
And just to add one other point, it's also a natural progression because, I mean, I think a lot of community colleges, we have award of credit procedures, right? We have experiential credit. So it's taking that and seeing how that can be incorporated into these programs as well. Florida has also a gold standard certifications where you can get course credit if you have certain industry certifications. So it just seemed like there are lots of pieces that are already there for us.
Thank you. Linda? Sort of champions that have emerged?
The champions, when we were awarded this grant, there were three of us. It was Mary Coles, who's the Department Chair of Computer Science, Computer Information Technology, an adjunct faculty, Michael Martino, who had actually been doing a lot of work, working with industry, recruiting industry in some of our capstone courses so that our students can turn around and get internships or jobs. So he was very interested, and then it was myself. We met every Tuesday and planned and built a timeline and a calendar until we could start hiring some people. Now the champions, at that point, it literally took up about 80-90% of my time in my job for a number of months. And now the champions are our director, who is Dr. Sam Greer, and then he has a staff working with him. So it's Sam, an instructional designer, Dr. Ningwa Ha, who is incredible with online learning. That's her doctorate. And we have Chris Burns, who is a multimedia specialist, a recruiter, which is also Michael Martino, and a consultant who's helping us recruit industry. We have a couple of other people who are working with us. Now, that team is a very strong team moving forward to help this succeed, which, unlike you at Valencia, we do have the money to help pay for these folks. So now my time has moved back, and I spend about 15% of my time with the grant now, going out more and talking about it. So these are the heroes, which this grant then, as it's moved into where Mary Coles has worked with the faculty members, they embraced it immediately. And so they've become the heroes, the worker bees, to actually make this happen.
Thank you. And just parenthetically, the seven colleges that do not have the labor funding with which we're working have chosen some different paths. And of those, I guess you guys are one of the seven, six of them will be enrolling students in spring semester. And what is, I think, very interesting in terms of the emerging stories here is that we have several colleges that have gone through the process really with no funding, but champions on their campus to keep it moving. We will have the story that Valencia is going through with regard to real deliberation of how each piece will work, and then the stories that the campuses that do have significant funding to really accelerate everything that's going on. And we will, by the way, be sharing all of these stories as they emerge. We're trying to document them and get them out there for other colleges across the country. Linda, you have students enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
Any surprises?
Yes, actually, quite a few surprises. So our first goal was to have 50 students come into our fall semester. There are actually 70 who are coming in at the 16-week, the 12-week, and the 8-week semester. Of these 70, we had 73, and only 3 have dropped. We're halfway through the semester, and those 3 who have dropped for reasons of that they're working, or that they're one of them had a something personal that was going on. That retention is unheard of for us in this particular area. Huge surprise. Another surprise was that there are actually, it's a very educated group. Now, we're recruiting them, they're coming to us, they're finding out about us, they go through a recruitment process, an orientation process, in which we have them take Smarter Measure. Smarter Measure assesses them whether or not they have plenty of time. They don't, nobody has any time, but assesses them and whether or not they're ready for this. In this process, they then speak with the department chair, Mary Coles, and then they are said, yes, you can go ahead and enroll. Of these, 51 of the 70 already have degrees. We were shocked about that, of coming to us. The majority of them are bachelors. There are 6 masters and then 3 PhDs. Huge surprise to us. Now, with that, a number of these people are employed. I think it's, 58 are employed with 40 plus hours a week jobs. They're taking an average of 2 courses. And I think many of them are just, how is this? They're getting their feet wet. Does this work for me? Of the others, the 19 are unemployed. We have 17% of this 70 are actually veterans, which we're really happy about that, delighted. We also recognize there's we need to do some more work this next year in being able to recruit women. They're lagging about 5%. We're a Hispanic serving institution where we have about 30% Hispanic population. That's lagging in coming to the computer science area by about 15%, so we need to do some work there. We recognize that the Asian population loves this style of going through coursework. They're double the normal rate. So a lot of surprises. And we'll find out, we don't have any data yet, just exactly how they're doing in the coursework. We have data in which we have a faculty coach who's actually calling these students, how are you doing? Do you like this coursework? And with all practical purposes, they actually enjoy this coursework quite a bit because it's organized. It's not only, there's a lot of interaction, which we added because that was lacking before in our distance learning, was the video-rich content, using social media. There are some that are saying, I'm overwhelmed, but for the most part, the surprises are that we need to tweak yet again, we have more work to do, but that it seems to be working.
That's exciting. Now, are most of your students taking these classes sequentially, or are they taking the 2 that they're taking all at once?
So in terms of are they taking it sequentially, Sally means are they taking them 1 at a time. Some of them are taking 4 at the same time. There are 3 students who are taking 4 at the same time, 2 male, 1 female. Other students are taking an average of 2 at a time.
Okay.
The others are taking 1 at a time and coming through. When they finish, they'll go to the next one. That's their choice, rather than us telling them you can only take 1 at a time. If they can bite off quite a bit, we let them bite it off. And then we help coach them through it, which is a fascinating concept, by the way. When Sally first came to us and said, you're going to need a faculty coach, oh, no, we're not going to need a faculty coach. Well, if you're thinking about competency-based education, yes. Find a champion who will pick up the phone and call a student. You missed a test. Did you know that? Well, yes. My daughter was sick. Okay, well, we're right here for you. So it was probably halfway into the process where I realized WGU is right, and I highly suggest getting somebody to champion your students at the same time if you don't already have it.
You know, I have a colleague in the audience here, Chris Mallett. And Chris, do you know off the top of your head, do most WGU students progress sequentially, that is, finish one course before they start another? That's my impression. But
yeah, most of the 40,000 in WGU will take
Would you be nice enough to go to the mic so our folks at home can hear.
Yeah, most of the students at WGU will take a one-at-a-time approach, but just like Linda described at Austin, our superstars will bite off as much as they can chew, and the model permits them to do that.
Yeah, thank you for confirming that. Karen, you mentioned that your team went over to Broward, did a bus tour, and Broward and Valencia are, what, 3 hours apart?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
It was
a
good drive.
Yeah. I wondered if you could share with us some of the lessons that your team were able to pick up from a campus that, as with Austin, has started enrolling students in their self-designed competency-based program.
I think the best part of the Broward trip was the fact that we got so many more people engaged in the conversation of competency-based. Broward was incredibly hospitable to us. They were great. They brought in deans, faculty, instructional people, everybody, and it was a very good exchange. I think that the lessons that were cemented was that the model that we're going to develop, if we go forward with this, is going to be the Valencia's model. So we're going to look and we're going to say, well, that's great what Western Governors is doing, and that's kind of cool what Broward's doing, but we would like to do this, or that's excellent. Let's borrow that. Broward has developed an online orientation that has two parts to it. One is any of its online students go through an orientation, and then they have an additional required orientation for students going through the competency base. And we're like, that's really a great model for us to follow. So there were lots of things that they were doing that we're definitely going to benefit from, but it also got us in a conversation about, well, we like that, but because they're using the pass, fail.
Oh, right. That's another interesting conversation.
Yeah. And yeah. I think in some schools are using grades. And that's a conversation that we have to have, is what would we do? Would we make it pass, fail? Would we have grades? Would we do what we have in our tenure academy? Would we have exemplary, acceptable, not acceptable? So it really got people thinking about it, and again, as a result of that trip, we have faculty that came back and said, you know, we want to start developing a pilot course now. So it was very good, and in that regard. But how are the students going to progress? Is it going to be linear, sequentially, or are they going to be able to sign up for courses?
And Broward has chosen one at a time, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we always thought when we started this process that developing the courses in a competency-based model, while it would be a lot of foundational work, it wouldn't be difficult because we're already outcome-based in our courses. But what would all the other infrastructure be?
Right? Sure.
What would be the registry? You know, all of those things that
sure.
I mentioned before. And that's we took a lot of lessons from Broward on what they're doing there.
Yeah.
And they also are developing a virtual simulation, which Valencia's also working on something like that, because our IT director's here today.
Great. And that simulation piece that they're working on, as well as all of the course materials and frameworks, because of the nature of that Department of Labor grant, will be open education resources. So we'll be the teams will be putting those up online within the next year, I think, to be available for anyone who wants to both learn and use the things that are being created. Linda, how did you guys decide to deal with progression through the courses in terms of grading, not grading?
That was a large conversation with our faculty, and we finally realized that we were going to award grades, A, B, C, and that some of the faculty have said that the student can retake a competency up to three times. Keep in mind that we do not have, even though they're competency-based modules, each course has between 5 to 10 competencies that are online. these competencies are mapped back with industry to make sure that the industry actually says that this is what's needed for a particular job. And with that, and the industry comes back and reviews the courses to make sure, yes, this is indeed, you know, we agree with this course content. So it's a very tight fit with the industry. The progression of grades, you know, they finally decided A, B, C. With that, they have, if a student flunks a course, they will have flunked a course. And that's the part where, you know, that's the same. The discussion was, what are you going to do with the actual traditional learning? How can you allow a student who's in traditional learning to take a test three different times when you wouldn't allow them to take that test three different times? So what we've done is broken the system without quite breaking it. That's what we keep saying over and over. And I imagine that this discussion is going to continue.
I'm sure it will, and I was just in Indiana talking with the folks at Ivy Tech that are part of our team as well, two of the campuses there, and then engaging with the system office, and we had that very conversation. And they are required to report grades that are mandated by their system and the way it's set up. But they are struggling with the notion, if a student in their traditional program can earn a C and progress, does that mean that or a D, actually, does that mean they're going to allow that student to earn a D in their competency-based program and progress? And they're trying to say, no, we don't want to do that because we want to be able to assure the mastery and structure it differently. But it's a huge conversation, and I would suggest to you it's a great vehicle for a conversation among faculty and others that are involved in supporting students as we look at what's working and what isn't within our institutions. Karen?
One of the topics at exchanges at Broward also was the faculty workload. Because that's also a very significant issue. Because when you start students, and they're progressing at their own pace, and you've got a faculty facilitating one of these courses, and you might start with 20, 24 students, and there may very quickly be six students who move out, another six, you know, start again. And how do you determine that workload? And that's a big conversation, as well as the advising piece. Valencia has career program advisors who advise our AS degree-seeking students. And they do an amazing job. I think they're a critical factor in helping students progress to graduation completion. What would their role be and what would the faculty's role be in specific advising? So that's another major conversation.
There's one of the things that's happened at all of these colleges is there have been fundamentally different kinds of conversations among different parts of the campuses. So the faculty, what we think of as the student support teams, the IT teams, the instructional design teams, everybody's talking with each other differently, and the net result is some incredible progress toward getting issues out in the open and thinking differently. And Linda, I know that you and I have talked about this before too, and it's a different conversation with your faculty, I know. Very interesting. I have promised to leave time not only for our audience here, but for those that want to use the chat line to ask any questions. Are there questions or comments that anyone here would like to make? It's a unique opportunity. Would you be nice enough to come up to the mic? Thank you. And Don, you're next.
Good morning.
Would you be nice enough to introduce yourself?
Oh, my name is Maria Ramos.
Thank you.
I am from Texas A&M Commerce. I am not an IT person. I actually am the Director of Financial Aid and Scholarships. Now, when I hear all of this conversation, your schools, how have they worked with the student side, especially financial aid, when you do have the Department of Ed that requires beginning, ending, and how are your my counterparts at your schools handling those type of situations and what discussions came up during the process of having to do this. With Texas A&M Commerce, we are part of a group that is going to go into a competency base. We call it the $10,000 bachelor's degree
right.
program.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get ahead of as much as possible so that when it actually is in place that I'm ready to tackle all of this. So.
I think there's going to be some conversations at both regional and national financial aid associations coming up within the next 6 months that might be of value to you. But WGU sort of solved that in their own framework and have dealt with it for many years. So our director of financial aid has been working with the directors of financial aid at each of our partner colleges. And Linda, do you want to talk about
sure.
that a little bit?
We keep saying we're breaking it without breaking it, and then we're going to break it. So with that, we have gotten around that by offering end and beginning dates with a 16-week course, a 12-week course, an 8-week course. These are combined together to make one course. So if a student comes, four students come in on the 16-week and it's combined with the 12-week, then there's another three or four students in the 8-week. Those all have beginning, ending dates. The financial aid at this moment is okay with that. At some point, we may have to actually take on more of the model WGU and have the $3,000 associate's degree. You know, I don't know what that would be at this moment. We haven't gone that direction yet, but that's the breaking without breaking.
And part of, just for awareness, what we do at WGU is we have start dates the first of every month, but to comply with federal financial aid requirements, we have set our terms at 6 months in length. You can set your term at any point. You just have to have one for financial aid purposes. So a student can start the first of any month, but he or she is then, if you will, accountable for satisfactory on-time progress, et cetera, to comply with financial aid requirements in that six-month period. And then they start a new term. But in that six-month period in the WGU model, they're paying a little under $3,000 every 6 months, and they can take as many courses as they choose to take. So if, as Chris mentioned, our superstars, they will go as fast as they can. Most of those people are working adults and have prior experience, or they're coming out of areas in which they've just never been credentialed. But they can move at a much faster rate. And that's one of the things that each of these colleges is interested in, but they're having to fit it into their traditional structures and still allowing for students to be able to progress at variable rates. And we'll be getting that information out as well within the next year as everybody has this implemented and is working with it. Don, you had a question? Chris, were you going to pop up too or no?
I'm Don Norris with Strategic Initiatives. This is a great description of your getting this program started. What I'd like to ask you is this. 5 years from now, what do the community colleges think this could be like? How significant is this going to be as a component in your portfolio?
That's a great question.
What answer would start?
I can only guess, but I think the sense is that this is going to be a significant model going forward. You know, we're starting with, we're looking just at IT and an IT certificate. But, you just go to, and every hour there's some session here at EDUCAUSE about competency-based education. So it's going to be significant. How significant, how widespread, I don't know. The interesting thing, again, going back to our Broward trip, they have the full IT degree they're offering, including the general education courses. So they actually have gen ed faculty at Broward who converted specific Comp 1, college algebra,
ethics,
think psychology,
philosophy,
into the competency-based model. And some of the models that we're hearing from other schools is they're putting the IT in competency-based, and the Gen Ed is still in the traditional, you know, online, and so it's kind of a blended program. But I think it's, you know, it's not that it's coming, it's here. You know, so how extensive it's going to be is, you know.
And for us, we have two other DOL grants in the area of competency-based education at ACC. And with that, it's already spreading out into the college. But for us, we recognize that competency-based education, because it's delivered distance learning for the most part, there'll be some hybrids, is weaving in and out of our distance learning. So that the distance learning is going through a revamp. It makes sense to have the very organized, interactive coursework of competency-based education. So in 5 years, you know, one hopes that it spreads out to the rest of the college, at least in the distance learning arena.
And Don, let me also take a crack at that. As you're aware, I've got some history with distance learning kinds of things, and I really am at a point where we've outgrown the exporting the classroom model in the use of technologies that do nothing but, here's what we've done in a classroom, oh, now we've got these tools, we can share this with the world, but we're still just exporting the classroom. We're not fundamentally shifting the way in which we're utilizing technologies to enhance learning, or we're utilizing the human element of the work with faculty and students, the expert and the novice, to be able to really help that novice develop into a professional, whether it's a professional academic or a professional in the field of work. But the issue around it is this offers a framework to begin those conversations on campus where we can move beyond just the model of this is how we've always done it, now we're going to add on technology, and rather truly integrate technology into the whole teaching and learning process. Right. So I would predict we're going to see terrific embracing of the whole framework change to be able to fully integrate technology right. For all kinds of reasons, and you know most of them, and you're right about a lot of them.
Because everything we learn from this process, we can apply to everything else we're doing in the traditional face-to-face and online. It's not just developing the competency base, but taking all of these lessons back into everything else we're doing.
I think we have about 2 minutes left. If there's another question, please.
That went fast.
Laura Pedrick, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And first, a couple things. One, I'd like to thank Western Governors for generous time and dispensing of knowledge to my colleagues at UW Extension. I know they made site visits in the development of our flex option degree. So we're neck deep in this process ourselves right now. And one comment about financial aid, there has been a recent Dear Colleague letter. It looks like there's a sort of major structural shift underway. So the National Financial Aid Directors yep. meetings would be a great resource for more on that. My question is, the Higher Learning Commission has a pilot program going, and we're part of it with Capella and Northern Arizona, and one of their criteria speaks to peer engagement. To what extent do you have peer engagement mechanisms, and what are they, and how do they work?
You mean with students, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. We've just actually had a wonderful time with the team here from Western Governors University looking at some of the technological solutions that can move us up a notch. We use peer engagement, but we do it through webinars, we do it through study groups, we do it in a variety of ways, but all of it technologically mediated. And if you've toured the floor, the exhibition floor, there's some really impressive new tools to enhance that are developing, and we will be exploring those and using them. So it's not impossible, it's just different again.
And for us, we realized from all of our research into distance learning, rule number one is interaction with each other, peer-to-peer, and then with a faculty member or a faculty coach. And one of the things that we recognize is we are actually, some of the courses are actually using a Facebook group page. As a matter of fact, I'm on one of those Facebook group pages where I can go in and see the questions happening from several of the students about the assignments. And I get very tickled that they're using Facebook to ask their instructor to, you know, what is it that I need to do for next, you know, for the next assignment, instead of going in through Blackboard, which is our LMS system. But it works, and I can see that it's working, and she's very interactive with them. We're also using, for our synchronous learning, we use Adobe Connect. Also in Blackboard, there's discussion boards. So that is, I do believe, a continuing, ongoing challenge that we have to find ways for them to talk and interact with each other.
How structured is that in space? Do you have, is it curated or moderated? Do people post questions out, or is it truly a student space?
I'm going to, if you can answer that quickly, sure. I think we're out of time, basically.
Yes, it's structured. It's a secret group. They make them secret closed groups just for that particular course.
Oh, a quick online question. Thank you. And our panelists will be here for a few minutes if you wanted to ask. But an online question?
I have a question from Lexi Bryan asking, have you considered utilizing this model for any of your outreach programs, particularly for helping those participating in high school equivalency programs?
I
don't think I heard the whole...
I think I've got that. If you have programs that are reaching into the high schools or are doing sort of alternative degrees for working adults, are you thinking about using these programs with that population?
I think at this point we're exploring competency-based just overall. And again, I think one of the things we're learning is that students need to go through a smarter measure, some kind of orientation, and that's going to be a deciding factor. But we haven't really looked beyond just our IT and some of those programs at this point.
Yeah. Linda?
We realize that we're having to take this in phases. So phase one is, who's coming to our program? Okay, we understand that. How do we now take care of the Hispanic student, and how do we take care of the female student? After that, probably 3 years from now, we're going to move into the high schools. We've had some discussions with that, but we have to take care of actually the workforce in this at this time. Not today are we doing anything in that, but we plan on doing something within the high schools at a later point.
And I just want to wrap up with one closing comment, and that is, as one of my colleagues, Nancy Thibault at Sinclair, has put it, all of the things that these colleges are doing are one-offs. You know, Linda's notion of breaking without breaking, but there's a lot of behind-the-scenes doing paper workarounds for all of the complex structures. But Nancy's point was, we have to figure out what those workarounds are so that we can automate them. And I thought that was a good concept to begin to think about. Please join me in thanking Linda and Karen, and thank you all for coming.